broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
And a very good morning to everyone in the studio and to our listeners.
Good morning, Steph.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Frosty 3 degrees this morning. Is everyone snap chill?
Oh, yes.
It's cool as ice. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've got all my scarves and beanies on the way to work.
Yeah, and I heard you might be off camping this weekend.
I'm going to try and brave the elements. Wow. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you're a brave man.
Yeah.
Yes. Brave man.
Yep. I'll be in a tent for this weather. I'll take my my young daughter out for a camping experience. But mostly I'm looking forward to just getting away myself and hitting the reset button a little bit. Yeah.
Got to do it.
Yeah.
Off the grid or not?
Disconnecting? What do they call it? Unconnecting? Disconnecting?
Yeah. Unplugging.
Unplugging. Yeah. That's the one. That's the word. That's the word.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So just still trying to recover from the end of financial year and hit the reset button a little bit.
Yeah, it was brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was for us in here. There's lots to do.
Yeah.
And it'll happen again. But but every time it happens, we're a bit better prepared than last year. And we take the lessons and we'll be standing better next year.
Well, I've got to say, I was actually away in the sort of the last week of the financial year. And Joel had the house absolutely perfect. And I realised when I got back.
Hey. Say again.
Yeah, I know. It shocked everyone. But what I realised was that he'd been having takeaway every night. So the kitchen hadn't been
touched. Already knew that.
A whole week of it. Yeah.
No mess, because
you
I didn't make any mess.
You surprised, Steph.
I got back and I thought, my goodness, he's kept the house in absolutely perfect condition. Yeah.
Just had to take the rubbish out.
That reminds me when I've moved out of a rental property in my 20s. And at the final inspection report, they said, you got to come back and clean the place again. This is, you know, you need to clean this, you need to clean that. And the oven hasn't been cleaned. And I said, that can't be possible because I never used it. The whole time I was there, I did not cook one thing in the oven. So anything that was in the oven dirty was there when I moved in.
Men, hey?
Well, it was a busy week last week, and by the time we got home, there was no time to cook.
Oh, gosh, I was the same. Mm. Yep.
All right, well, let's kick off today's first topic. Joel, we're going to throw to you, and you're going to talk to us about the latest rates and current market conditions.
Yeah, well, look, if you've been living under a rock this week, you would not be aware then that the Reserve Bank has cut interest rates for the first time in consecutive months in 7 years. So we have gone in 2 months from a cash rate from the Reserve Bank at 1.5%. That has now been reduced to 1.25 last month, and then again this week down to 1%, with some economists predicting that it might even go a little bit further later this year. Now, the in all likelihood, the Reserve Bank is going to be on hold and pause at least for several months while they get an assessment as to what the data is likely to show as a result of these rate cuts. But I guess the key question is, why is the Reserve Bank doing this? When, if you have a look at what's going on with the stock market at the moment and you have a look around and you see that unemployment is only at 5.2%, which is actually historically a very, you know, it's almost close to being full employment. Generally, somewhere around sort of 4.5% is considered around full employment. So why is the Reserve Bank cutting interest rates right now when things don't seem to be as, you know, bad as perhaps what the interest rates might suggest? Well, the reality is that the Reserve Bank has two primary mandates. The first mandate is price stability, maintaining inflation.
Yep.
So they currently have a inflation target of 2 to 3%. Which means that they don't want general prices in the economy to rise by more than 2 to 3% per annum. And currently, inflation is running below that range. Now, there's an argument to suggest that perhaps that range is too high, given that we're now in a new environment where technology is helping to make things a little bit more efficient and there's a little bit less need for lower-paying jobs. But nevertheless, that is the target inflation rate, and we are tracking slightly below that. But the other key mandate that the Reserve Bank has is maintaining employment rates. Now, at 5.2%, that doesn't sound so bad, but the reality is that it's the underemployment that they're concerned about. So at the moment, there is around about 1 million people in Australia that are considered to be underemployed. That means that they're looking for work, more hours of work, but they can't find it.
Mm.
So the underemployment rate is currently sitting at 8.1%. And the biggest cohort of that million people that are considered to be underemployed are the ages between 15 to 24 years of age. They're the age group that's really suffering at the moment because they can't seem to find jobs that are seeing those jobs go up in wage inflation. They're not seeing any increase in their wages, and they're
Just ask, that's not just people that are just not employed at all. It's just people that are in part-time work.
No, so these are the way that they measure the employment rate is by having a look at all of those people who are actively consider themselves in the job market.
Right.
Okay, and then they, out of that group of people that consider themselves in the job market looking for work or actually in employment and got sufficient employment, then they assess, okay, how many of those people actually can't find work at all, and you have the 5.2% unemployment rate, and then how many of those are actually got work but want more hours of work, and that's what they call the underemployment rate.
Right.
So the cut in interest rates is designed to try and help stimulate demand and help stimulate cost efficiencies within businesses and encourage investment and fuel growth, which will help theoretically have an upward pressure on wages and increase obviously openings for employment. But obviously, interest rates is only one tool, and I think that's why we're starting to see the federal government come in with tax cuts and stimulating through infrastructure planning, so that we can try and create and stimulate a little bit more demand and try and get that underemployment rate down a little bit.
Mm. The term that they use for it is spare capacity. Mm. They say the economy has spare capacity, which means there are people that want to work. There's these people are a resource. They could be productive, but there's not businesses that are employing them to do something. Businesses or government, either the public sector or the private sector. So there's a couple of things that governments can do. The government's treasuries can cut interest rates, which reduces businesses' expenses when they're borrowing, which means that businesses should be in a position to spend more money and employ more people. It also has an effect on consumers. If your average home loan person has more money in their pocket, then they will spend more on retail and discretionary purchases. So those businesses need to employ more people. But then the third factor is for governments to employ people.
Mm.
How does a government employ people? Well, they actually pay for infrastructure projects or provide services to people. And in the last probably decade, we've grown this unhealthy public perception that governments need to deliver surpluses no matter what, whereas in reality, what's needed now and what the Reserve Bank governor is saying, the government needs to spend money.
Mm.
Stop saving money, spend money. Mm. Because if you keep saving money, well, you're dragging on the economy, which means the economy is not employing as many people, which then feeds into lower taxes for the government, but also feeds into, well, the economy not doing well and people not having jobs.
Can I ask, though, that category of 15 to 24, to me, would be students, a lot of them, right? Trying to get into part-time work.
You think so, yep.
Has the economy kind of shifted, I guess, with the retail side of the sector, where you can't get a job in sort of lowly paid retail jobs? Because when I went through university, you'd work for, I don't know, the reject shop or a place like that.
Yep.
Is that bricks and mortar shift changing the economy, that we don't have enough of those types of stores anymore to employ these young kids?
Look, I think the stores are still there. There might have been a pullback to some extent, but also don't forget that there are other pathways to other kinds of employment.
Yep.
And things like the building industry and the housing industry has to employ apprentices to train the next wave of blue-collar workers with some level of skills.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also the need for those businesses to be able to afford to employ an apprentice.
Yeah.
But if there's not enough new homes being built or construction projects on the go, either constructing buildings or constructing infrastructure projects, well, then those apprentices are not going to have employment.
Right.
Yeah, I think over the last 10 years, you're probably seeing it at the margin. Those lower entry jobs aren't as plentiful as perhaps what they would have been 10 years ago.
Mm.
You know, and that's probably a function of where, you know, previously you would have entry-level jobs, people in mailrooms and, you know, general administration. These days, and we do it here ourselves, you've got outsourcing overseas. Technology has enabled small businesses to be able to outsource many of the functions that we'd be paying higher wages to.
A lot of roles are redundant.
Yeah, so roles are redundant here in Australia, and that's just a change in the economy. Online shopping has increased, so you know the need for staffing those retail outlets with the same number of staff is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a dramatic shift, but it's at the margin, and at that margin is enough for us to be going from what would be a 3.5 to 4% GDP growth rate to something that's closer to low 2% annualized growth rate.
And I'm going to have a real go at the government here because I think they're a bunch of wallies when it comes to what's happening at the moment. If the government is going to put money into the economy, they can do it by projects and spending the money, or they can just put that money into consumers' hands through tax cuts.
And that's exactly what happened in the last couple of days.
And that's right. So the week in politics is that some tax cuts have gone through Parliament. Yes, I think it's a good thing because it is putting more money into the economy because you're putting through the tax cuts. The money is going to go into people's hands and then people can go about and spend that money. But I haven't heard anything to suggest that the government has actually thought about where the money would best be placed. Because when you simply put a tax cut into people's hands, who has looked at what people actually then do with that money? They boost retail. Well, that's good, but how much of that is online shopping and online shopping for overseas businesses, which isn't going to help us, and how many people are going to use it for other things to boost a retail sector that might actually be doing okay, or it might not be, I'm not actually sure, versus doing infrastructure projects, which would then actually directly employ people. See, if you cut taxes and put money into people's hands, then you don't have 100% of that money going straight into the economy.
Yep.
There's immediate leakage.
Yep.
But if the government were to take that money and spend it directly on a project, well then 100% of that money is in the government's control to go into the economy. And they lose that benefit, and they also lose the ability to say, well, the economy overall is weak, which part of the economy actually needs stimulus? And they haven't taken that opportunity.
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting that they are cutting interest rates right now, but the Australian stock market is actually close to making an all-time high. In fact, as of last night, we are just 1.6% away from the ASX 200 hitting an all-time high, a level that we haven't seen for almost 12 years.
Woo!
So, I think it's...
it's been 12 years ago.
Well, it was the peak in the major bull market in the resources sector, which led, and also we had the start of the global financial crisis.
Oh.
They were good times before the crisis.
Should we be concerned?
I'll go into a few other things to sort of see where we are. But does anyone remember what they were doing back in 2006 and 2007 when the good times were rolling?
I was early in my career then.
Yeah.
Yes.
There was a lot of wine around my business at that time and parties. So.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Yes. The money was flowing.
Was it like the Wolf of Wall Street?
There was many, many similarities. Let me tell you that. I remember, we were going to stockbroker presentations and very little expense was spared when we were going to those presentations. There's all sorts of lunches and... Very expensive. Yeah, well, that's right.
No, Steph, don't go down that path. I did used to have a driver when I was a graduate. So.
Oh, wow. As a graduate, you had your own driver.
Yeah.
Wow.
Didn't last very long.
It was some fun times. I mean, I was a wide-eyed, young little buck, thinking This is what it's all about. Yeah. Yeah.
Greed is good.
Greed is good. They were good times, we had little awareness of what was around the corner. Nevertheless, they were good times.
Mm. Mm. Yes. Yeah, everyone at a product provider had an expense card.
Yes, exactly.
And it just seemed like an endless pit of money.
Yep.
And I remember going to a pub on a Sunday afternoon, and I just bumped into one of these guys at random.
Yeah.
He was just there with his fiancée, and it's like, oh, Louis, come have some drinks with us.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm paying for everything. It's like, because I'm leaving this company and I'm going to another one and I've still got the expense card. So let's just rack up some expenses.
Nowadays you have to really realize, so you know, you have to account for every expense nowadays. Yeah. It's, you know, right down to the wire. So.
Yep.
So interesting. And in fact, what we've also found is that it's not just the Reserve Bank that is cutting interest rates. In fact, there is now speculation. In fact, most market analysts are expecting that the US will start cutting interest rates perhaps as soon as July.
Oh, really?
It's interesting that these interest rate cuts are actually taking place when the ASX is almost at an all-time high and the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, and the Dow Jones Industrial Averages have all just this week hit all-time highs.
Right.
So this is sort of flying in the face of what you would usually see. Usually interest rates don't get cut unless the market is falling, the economy is really in the hole. But that is what's happening. Now, I've got some research here. So if you are concerned about whether or not we're close to the peak and we should start selling out, because if you know anything about history, 2007, the Dow and the S&P 500 both hit all-time highs that date back to the dot-com boom days, and then that signaled basically the peak, and then we had the GFC. I think this time is, I'm going to mention these words, this time is slightly different. Oh, those fateful words.
It's not the same, baby.
Yeah.
I swear I've changed. Now, the stock market can be an abusive partner.
Exactly. So anytime someone says this time is different, it usually isn't. And the same thing happens. But look, just some basic research that shows what has happened the last few times that the US Federal Reserve has cut interest rates. So assuming the Fed cuts interest rates in July as is expected, there have been a number of instances where the Fed has cut interest rates and the US economy has not fallen into recession within 12 months after that. And there's also been a number of instances where the US Federal Reserve has cut interest rates and within 12 months the US has actually fallen into recession. Now, in each of those instances, from the date that the interest rate cut first happened, the performance of the US stock market has been very positive within the 12 months after. Now, if you had have been invested in the S&P 500 12 months after the Fed started cutting interest rates after a rate raising cycle and the US economy fell into recession around that time within that 12 month period, the stock market was still up around 12% per annum on average across all of those instances.
And really?
There was around about 15 instances since 1920.
Wow.
If, however, the Fed starts cutting interest rates and the US economy doesn't fall into recession within the next 12 months, which is what I expect, then the S&P 500 is up on average 23.5% 12 months later.
Ooh.
And what you're seeing right now is that with the S&P 500, the Dow and the NASDAQ all now breaking out just this week to all-time highs, there's broad confirmation and strength that the US stock market is starting to find strength. We're seeing the Australian stock market breaking out to all-time highs.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting to see that, in fact, we could be, after what had been an 18-month period of time where stocks have done nothing, that we're now coming to the end of that, you know, consolidation and corrective phase, and we could be beginning the next phase of the next major leg up. Now there's just a couple more things to support that. So there is some analysis that was conducted by sentiment trader analyst Jason Gopfert, and he basically had a look at so right now S&P, the Wall Street analysts have on average set a target of where they believe the US stock market will finish by the end of the year. That target is basically in line with where the stock market is today. Now, historically, when the US stock market hits that target around mid-year, it has generally been a positive for stocks in the next 6 months to follow, with an average gain of around about 10%.
Ooh.
So if you're looking at those two numbers, there seems to be a strong correlation between an interest rate cut and a non-recession and a 23% average return, and Wall Street analysts' expectations being met in the middle of the year, which generally leads to a 10% return by the end of the calendar year, 6 months later. Now, also, this is happening at a time when US analysts, on average, have been cutting their estimates for stocks at the greatest pace. So what they're basically saying is that they're downgrading earnings for their for companies this quarter at the greatest rate that they've been cutting estimates for since September 2017. So this, the, on average, analysts have been cutting their expectations for the stocks that they cover much, much more than right. boosting the expectations
so
for
they're
corporate
down
earnings.
On their expectations.
Correct. In fact, they haven't been this pessimistic on corporate profits in the US since September quarter of 2017. And if you have any idea as to what happened back then, the US stock market actually put on a return of around about 15% in the next 3 months after that.
Wow.
So lots of positive signs, even though there seems to be an overarching tone of negativity.
Interesting stuff, guys. We're just going to take a quick break and we're going to be back after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Okay, and welcome back, guys. We're now going to throw over to Louis. And Louis, you're going to speak to us about debts and alternatives that you can actually use.
I am. And this is actually, I think, a huge topic for people's personal finances. So I'm actually going to spend a few weeks covering two concepts, and that is why debt is your friend and why it's okay to have debt.
Debt's my friend?
Ooh. Debt is your friend.
Okay.
Jeez.
What are some of the magic things that debt lets you do?
Buy a house.
Buy a house.
Keeps you awake at night?
Yeah, so there are some kinds of debts that can keep you awake at night, and that comes from poor financial habits, mm-hmm. so overextending on your means. But if we assume that you have your savings under control and you are saving money, not spending more that you earn, which is a fundamental I talk about a lot, if you've got that nailed down, well then, debt is your friend.
Okay, tell us more.
You're looking at me with this disbelief in your eyes.
Yeah, but I can be convinced.
Okay, so, well, everyone uses debt to buy a home. Show me a first home buyer that saves up all the cash that they need before they buy their first home. Is debt their friend?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they have to be.
They
because
couldn't buy without it.
Yeah, that's right. You just simply couldn't do without it. So debt lets you acquire assets before you could otherwise acquire them. And as part of a long-term plan, that can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So I'm going to spend a few weeks saying that it's okay to have debt and looking at some alternatives ways that you can manage your debts and use debt to your advantage. And part of what I'm doing here is I'm smashing some intergenerational financial planning advice, which I don't think is really relevant anymore.
Mm.
Most people have their financial blueprints handed down to them from their parents.
Yep.
So they inherit their perceptions and their habits around money. And for our parents and anyone who had debt before the early 90s, they suffered through some pretty challenging times with debt and interest rates, particularly on home loans, reaching above 15%.
Yeah, crazy times.
So, and in fact, you got to go back to before the Second World War, before interest rates were anything reasonably low, like 7% or less. So the generations before us have lived through about four decades of interest rates at 8% or higher, and getting as high as 15, 16, 17, even 18%. So, of course, the learnings of those generations was whenever you get debt, pay it down as quick as you can. Because if you're paying 10% interest or more, well, then your highest return is going to come from reducing that debt. Plus, there's all these risks around it. So, of course, you're going to pay down your debt as quickly as you can. And if it's your home loan, well, you're using after-tax money to pay down those debts and pay the interest costs on it. So it's a very expensive form of getting money. Today's environment is different.
Completely different.
Yeah. Completely different. So since the in the years before the global financial crisis, through the early 2000s, interest rates were on mortgages were maybe 5.5% to 6%.
Yep.
And this is back in the day when the Reserve Bank considered 7.5% a neutral interest rate for home buyers. Into the global financial crisis, the years beforehand when the economy was booming, interest rates were pushing up towards 8.5%. And I remember that last interest rate increase happening, and it was really starting to bite on some people at 8.5%. And then the global financial crisis happened, and they cut interest rates by 3% within a matter of months. Since then, interest rates have been about 5% or less, and that's been for the best part of 11 years now.
So would you say we're sort of on a par with previous generations, given the house prices are far more expensive for this generation, but the interest rates are lower?
In terms of servicing?
Affordability based on that.
Affordability based.
We complain about it all the time, but I'm just asking: is it, you know, are we sulking a little bit? You know, given that our you know, everyone's lived through really tough times back in the day.
Well, I mean, people today complain. But people in the last generation complained too. And I think it's just human nature that we all complain about the circumstances because everyone's got challenges.
But do you think it was fairly level? Do you think we're fairly level with what's happened?
Affordability historically has always been around this level. Financial stress has is a relatively new concept, but has always been around that. That level of 35% of your income. If you're spending more than 35% of your income on housing, then you're in a financial stress situation. And that's always been the case. It's just that when interest rates were higher and house prices relatively lower, you couldn't borrow as much before you got into that financial stress situation. So nowadays, you do have to borrow a lot more money to buy an asset and have the same amount of your income go towards that. And the other thing is today it's much more prevalent to have a two-income household than it was 30 years ago. So those two things have led to asset prices increasing, but mortgage repayments not increasing all that much.
As a percentage of household income.
Correct, as a percentage of household income. So in the last probably 20 years, we've had a very long period of time with interest rates at 5% or less. There was a pre-GFC time where they got up to 8% or so, and that was tough. But now, home loan rates, with this latest cut, they're going to be about 3.5%.
Which is incredible.
Which is incredible. I mean, the inflation rate target is 2 to 3%. It's actually running a little bit below 2. But if you can borrow money at inflation plus 1%, I mean, what asset are you going to buy that is not going to go up by inflation plus 1%. So I'm going to spend a few weeks looking at what people can do. My first example of what you can do instead of paying off your mortgage. So I'm going to have a go at the advice where people think I have to pay off my home loan before I do anything else to create wealth. And this is why this is the wrong advice. The first thing I'm going to talk about is super contributions. It's not necessarily the first thing people should do, but I'm going to explain this one because it's quick and easy. So let's say you've got $5,000 of savings. You've earned that income, you've got the savings, and you can put that into your home loan now if you choose to. If you put that $5,000 into your home loan, then your home loan is now lower by $5,000. Mm-hmm. But how much income did you actually have to earn to get that $5,000 in your bank account? So before tax, you had to earn about $8,200.
Mm. Assuming what tax rate?
I'm assuming an income over $90,000 sure. per year,
yep.
which is a 39% tax rate.
Yep.
So you had to earn $8,200. Now, if you had put this $8,200 into superannuation instead, you'd have almost $7,000 in your super fund.
That's a huge increase already.
So you can have $5,000 off your mortgage, or you can have $6,967 in your super fund.
Yeah.
You've just magically created $1,967 basically out of thin air.
Yeah. And that works out to be about a 40% return.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just changing the mindset of people as well. You know, it's when you see it sort of coming off your mortgage, you go, oh, that's good. It's just sort yep. of changing that mindset to know that you are saving it, and you know, super is a good alternative.
So. Exactly. So that's what I'm doing today and in the coming weeks. I'm trying to change mindset.
Yeah.
Because not many people say debt is your friend.
No.
And it's okay to have debt. But that's the point. That's why I'm saying this. So $5,000, if you put it pre-tax into your super fund, and that is your rate of tax, well, yeah, Joel, you're exactly right. You've got an instant 39% return through the tax deduction. So show me an investment or show me any alternative that's going to give you an immediate 39% gain.
Without risk.
Risk-free.
Without risk. Because that's just the tax savings.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we can then factor in is the $5,000 that would have sat on your home loan, you pay less interest, but your interest rate should be 3.5%. Mm. So your after-tax earnings is 3.5%. It's not a very good rate of return.
Mm.
Whereas the $6,900 that sits in your super fund, even your average good performing super fund is returning 7 or 8 or 9% per year.
Yeah. Yeah,
good one.
Yeah. If you're in a UGC portfolio, well, then our target return is 13% per year and has actually been around 14, 15% for 5 years, 18% for 3 years.
Yep.
I'm not bragging too much.
I was gonna say, shameless plug.
But, but the rate of return is different as well. So one is the tax savings. For people in that tax bracket, it's 39% advantage. For people in other tax brackets, if you're earning less than $90,000, then it's less. If you're earning over $180,000, well, then you've got an even bigger advantage from the tax benefits. You've got to be doing this.
Yeah.
As part of your overall plan, if you've got the savings, you got to consider doing things outside of paying down your home loan, and contributing to super is a great one.
And a key. One of the things that gets lost in this is that you're actually not reducing debt. You're not reducing debt. In fact, what you're actually doing is you're improving your balance sheet, because the asset side is growing far more significantly than the debt side is going up. In fact, debt side's still either staying the same or going down.
Yep.
So you're actually improving your net worth by taking advantage of this opportunity. You're not in a worse position.
Absolutely. And that's one of the concepts that people miss is, yes, cash flow is important, but cash flow is not your measure of wealth. Your actual measure of wealth is your personal balance sheet, your assets minus your liabilities. And it doesn't matter if you grow your assets or reduce your liabilities, you achieve the same net result.
Correct.
But here's a way to grow your assets a lot faster
yeah.
than reduce your liabilities.
Good advice. We're going to take another short break just so I can go and dump some money in my super, and we'll be back after this message.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03 8657 7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
Okay, welcome back, guys. And we're now going to throw to Brett, who's going to speak to us about spruikers. Not spookers, but spruikers. What is it?
You don't know what a spruiker is?
Property spruiker?
Yeah, mate, it's property spruikers. But I'd imagine spruikers would exist in other parts. There would be potentially stock market spruikers or other people that spruik their wares in terms of what they're trying to sell or push to the marketplace. The reason I wanted to talk about spruikers today is the residential property market in Australia has basically bottomed out and starting to gain again according to all of the data. So all of the, you know, the clearance rates are up, the volumes back on the market are up, and the latest data from CoreLogic shows that the average sales prices are up compared to where they were last month. So it shows that the property market's turning.
In fact, last month was the first increase in Melbourne and Sydney property prices for almost 2 years.
Now, obviously, one swallow doesn't make a summer, so 1 month is not necessarily saying we're, you know, it's guaranteed to continue that way. But typically, when the property market is good and consumer sentiment around property is good, there's more and more people willing to participate. And those that are either not in the market looking to buy or people that are in the market and thinking of investing are more open to ideas and opportunities. And hence, in any market where there's a demand or an opportunity, you get the good people taking advantage of it, but you also get the not so good people. And we're using the word spruiker as a negative here. And the reason being is a spruiker, by definition, in the way we're going to discuss it today, is someone that's offering you something that sounds really good but doesn't deliver. Okay? And one of the reasons I thought it was good today, because with the market starting to turn, and if it does continue upwards, the spruikers are going to come back out of the woodwork again. They're going to be active because they believe that the market's ripe for them again. And I thought it was worth touching on how do you identify a spruiker and what can you do if you are in the net of a spruiker to assess them and make decisions. Now, an interesting thing about spruiking as well, last November, a property spruiker in Australia by the name of Rick Otten, I can say the name because it's published in this article, was actually fined one of the largest amounts ever by the ACCC. $18 million he was fined.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Okay.
What for?
So if anyone's heard of Rick Otten, he wrote a book and had a whole philosophy that was basically saying how to buy a house for $1.
Right, what? Okay.
Yeah. So, and this is typical of what a spruiker is. They make a promise that just sounds so phenomenally good that it gets your interest, but it can never really be delivered on. So the ACCC fined him $18 million. Whoa. And the reason in the ruling was basically for peddling false hope.
I hope he sold 18 million copies.
Well, yeah, I don't know how much. But look, he was around with this model since roughly the year 2000. So his business name was called We Buy Houses. And the ACCC and New South Wales Fair Trading found that their organisations, it was a real estate investment strategy which was based on programs, so you would pay for education and everything else. But it was based on the investigation, it contained false and misleading terms. Or false and misleading claims. So therefore, the fine is probably justified because over the period of his life, he's probably had a lot of people buy mentoring and coaching and whatever else from him. But no, you know, I don't think there's anyone that is an active real estate owner or investor or participant in the property market that would understand how you could buy a house for a dollar. It's just not real.
Doesn't make any sense.
No. So I thought on the basis of that, we'll talk a little bit about, okay, What are the other types of spruikers and how can you be aware of them? So a lot of the time, they're spruiking property under the guise of wealth creation. Okay, now that doesn't mean that property isn't for wealth creation, but it's how do you go about it? And a lot of the time, these spruikers are getting you to a seminar or an event, whether it's via a phone call or an email or some sort of brochure that's painting a really rosy picture about don't miss out or how you can make massive money in the property market. Then when you get there, they tell you all these great stories. Typically, they'll have, you know, a whole spruiking type of presentation around how much money you can make. And then they'll usually have some form of high-pressure tactics to get you to sign up on the spot.
Yep.
That's typically the spruiker model. So they'll ask you to sign up on the day, maybe offer incentives and discounts. A lot of the time they'll have other finance experts in the room, say we've got a mortgage broker here or we've got someone else that can help you get your affairs in order, trying to really make you buy into the hype at the event and make a decision on the spot.
Yeah.
And typically when you're buying something or you're going to put money down into property, that's a big decision. There's a significant financial outlay and commitment you're making. So if you've gone to one of these seminars and you're being asked to make a decision on the day, that should be the biggest warning sign. You know, anyone that's going to have you making a massive financial commitment shouldn't be asking you to make a decision after 1 or 2 hours of being offered it.
Yeah.
And for those that have been in this position or are going to be in this position, there is now a mandatory cooling off period.
That's good.
Okay. Right.
So that if you have signed up on the day, you do have the right to cancel that within a period of time. Now, I'm not 100% sure on what those cooling off periods are. I believe it's up to 10 days.
Yeah.
And it may even be extended if at the seminar or the way you attended wasn't outlined to you that you were going to be made an offer or being sold something. Mm. So that
just
may extend
hope
your...
Just the tactics are, you know, easy enough to get out of, because sometimes the clauses can be very tricky and they...
They can be, but this is where the ACCC is stepping in and saying regardless of clauses, there's a mandatory calling off period.
That's good.
So, it pays to be aware of that. So even if you do get caught in what you believe is a spring event, because it's really easy to buy into the hype, and if there's a lot of other people around signing up and you know, gathering, you know, information and saying this is great, sometimes you feel like, well, I don't want to miss out, so you'll jump on board, and then a couple of days later you speak to a friend and says, oh, don't do that, that's really risky, I had a friend that lost and blah blah. So yeah, that cooling off period I think is a real benefit. But anyway, some other things to look out for. So the high pressure sale tactics, deals where the Spruiker supplies other services to help you facilitate and get on board. The suggestion that the scheme is government approved.
Oh, well.
Often they might use that by referencing the ATO or ASIC, which they can potentially say, oh, yeah, we're registered with ASIC, which any company can be, but that doesn't mean it's approved or sanctioned in any way. Quite often they might offer loans or a source of credit to help you pay your enrollment fees. Right. And one of the things I'd say here is a lot of the time the Spruikers, they're either selling you one of two things. They're selling you a property, which, if you think about it, what's in it from them? Well, they're getting a commission from a developer to help get the sale, or they're selling you some sort of training and coaching that they're making their fees on and maybe putting you in a room with 20 others so they make significant amounts of money. Now, whenever you're going to commit to either of those, it would make sense and it would be prudent to make sure that you've had your financials assessed. Now, a lot of the time, these guys are not assessing your financials in any way. They don't care whether you've got the money or not, because they'll say, oh, we can find someone that'll lend you the money via personal loans or something else. So they're not assessing whether you've got the ability to pay that back. All they're trying to sell you on is, well, buy my course, you'll make so much money, whatever you borrow now is insignificant.
Yeah.
So that's part of the high pressure sales tactic. So always be wary of wherever they say we'll be able to get you finance or get you money. A lot of the time they say they might spruik strategies that put your current home at risk by trying to leverage the equity out. Now, obviously, Louis, you just spoke about debt. And if you use the equity you may have in your home to extend your line of credit or the debt of your mortgage, that can be really good. But sometimes in a spruiking environment, if that's the way they're doing it, you need to be mindful of what their agenda is.
Any strategy that involves borrowing against your primary place of residence needs to be done with due care and consideration and thought and strategic thinking, not just a sales pitch.
So look, the last few to red flags to see when they're claiming capital growth rates that just, you know, can't be validated independently and just seem way off the charts to be credible. So an easy way to do that is just to look at any of the main property portals and see what average capital growth rates have been in an area or over time. And we've spoken before that, you know, anything above a 10% capital growth rate is probably not real. And anything that's going to be sustainable over the long period is probably going to be down around maybe 5 or 6% to be a really great return. So if anyone's spruiking above that, I would run for the hills. That could happen in 1 year, maybe 2 years. But anything that you think, oh, I'm going to get this every year for the rest of my life owning it, can't happen. Well, it just doesn't happen. And more, as we alluded to, a lot of the time they're spruiking one particular development because they've got the developer that's trying to sell this project. Their model is to take it to a group of investors and get paid significant commissions for helping everyone buy these properties as an investment, but really their agenda is to make the commissions.
And that's a key part as well as spruikers. You've got to understand who is paying the spruiker. It's not, if you're getting this done and they're saying, you know, no fees on the transaction, that's because the developer is paying the commission to the spruiker.
And that's typical. Like a lot of the time if they're, you know, offering a strategy or a scenario that says here's how you can make lots of money with property, and then the way to do it is to buy a property off the plan, more than likely that is the way it's going to happen, is that they're going to be making significant commissions from the developer and you're buying a property that is probably going to be overvalued and maybe not the best investment grade property.
Yeah. You have to strongly assess the value proposition of whatever you're buying. Mm. So what do they know that you don't? And what exactly are they providing? Why is using them better than using an alternative service or an alternative provider? And there's two things that I think of. For places that are selling something for free, well, they're getting paid somehow. Mm. For where they're selling something like an education program, well, if they provide an education program and then they have something on the back of it, it's kind of a way to get around the financial planning rules.
Yeah.
I mean, as financial advisors and real estate agents, they have a fiduciary obligation to the person they're representing. A real estate agent in the selling is representing the vendor, but a financial planner is there to represent you. Mm. A real estate buyer's advocate is there to represent you. And they have a duty and an obligation to look out for your best interests. When it comes to an education program, the typical approach is come to our free seminar and they get maybe 100 people in the room. And then they'll offer something to buy at relatively low cost. They'll offer something for, I don't know, $500 or $1,000. And they'll get enough people excited so that maybe 30% of people buy it.
Yep.
And the other 70 people walk away. And then they have 30 people go through the next stage, which might be a couple of days education program. Then they'll offer something else, which will be at higher cost. Now it's maybe a $5,000 package. And they'll have a certain number walk away, and they might have 30% take up the next package. And then they go through that program, and then they get to the next point, which might be a property purchase, or it might be another program, which is a higher cost. So the cost gets higher and higher the deeper people get into these education programs. Mm. And because it's an education program, they're only providing a service which gets them around the rules around financial advice.
Yeah. So, and that's another key thing. Anytime you attend some of these seminars, because there can be some good people out there giving good information at these seminars. And I guess the main thing is to look at, do they have any license? Do they have an AFSL, an Australian credit license, or a real estate license? If they don't have any one of those and they're talking about property, I would say, well, instantly there's a red flag.
Yeah.
Mm. And also, obviously, the high-pressure sales tactics. Anyone that's asking you to make a decision on the spot, that's a red flag.
Mm. Yeah.
In a big way as well.
I've seen some amazing presentations with wonderful services like personal coaching or business coaching or public speaking courses.
Yep.
I have seen a seminar of an online trading platform, which to me looked wonderful, but I've done a university course in technical analysis. And I'm thinking, these other people in the room, I'm pretty sure they're not university qualified to look at market highs and lows. Yeah. So I don't think they're going to get the value out of this software package. And yeah, I'm a bit dubious, but sometimes it could be very good.
Yeah, it could be. And the challenge is, how do you know if you're not educated or experienced in the area you're going to attend this seminar about? As you say, spruiking's not solely for property, as Louis mentioned. You know, it could be other forms of coaching. It could be about the stock market or other financial matters. So, yeah, I guess the best advice, and there is a website too that people can go to for more information about all sorts of spruikers, called consumerlaw.gov.au. So that's probably a reference guide if you're ever going to these seminars and you're interested. Maybe that's one place just to go and get a cross-check. But the major advice is always get independent professional advice before making any decision.
Mm. Yeah.
So maybe before, you know, if what you're seeing looks really good, before you make a commitment, go away and speak to someone independent of that for their opinion and advice.
Good one, Brett.
That would be the best way to do it.
And I guess at the end of the day, if it sounds too good to be true, then it probably is.
Typically it is. Yeah.
And Brett, whose opinion might people try and get?
Typically, if it's...
Say us, Brett.
Yeah, I'm getting there, Louis. I was definitely going to get there. I'd have to say, we've got independent advice, because obviously, yes, we hold an AFSL, so we've got all the qualifications, but we've also got the compliance. So whatever we're going to give you, we must be going through a set process to give you that advice. And also with our real estate license and our advocacy service, we're acting on your behalf, so we're not getting paid any commissions from anyone else. Correct. So therefore, we can give you independent and quality advice.
Well, let's just for compliance purposes, call it impartial.
Impartial. Yeah. There we go.
Independent is actually a restricted term under the Corporations Act.
Oh, okay.
There you go, guys. You're definitely not Spruikers.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Look, we're going to move on to our last segment for the day, and that is You Can't Be Serious.
Woo.
You can't be serious. Who's got one for me today? I mean, you'll all have one, I'm sure.
Well, I will kick it off today, and I mean this with the utmost respect, but how about going out for a sunbath only to be disrupted with a falling, frozen body
out of
a plane?
That must have happened in Melbourne recently of a morning.
It's been that cold.
Yeah. Well, for one poor gentleman who was a stowaway from a what they believe would be a Kenyan Airlines plane, probably somewhere from Nigeria, this poor gentleman, obviously seeking a better life, had crawled into the landing carriage, was snap frozen to death. Oh. And on the entry into Heathrow, the poor soul fell out of the plane, only to fall right at the feet of a sunbather.
Oh, my goodness.
So sad. It's a really sad story, isn't it?
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
It's just terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine the person that. Would be thawed out. I don't know about in London, the sun, though. But
he was just chilling.
It's a heat wave at the moment.
He was chilling.
Oh, my goodness. I've got one, and I love millionaires. If you don't have a respect of people who have money, then you'll probably never have any yourself. Here's a millionaire who maybe missed out on some of the experiences of their youth. This millionaire is offering, is offering £5,000 for someone to go to music festivals with him and give him a legitimate festival experience. Kind of like a personal festival concierge.
Wow.
So
there'd be plenty of takers.
Help me.
There would be heaps.
So help me get around the festival like normal people get around festivals, as if I'm not a millionaire. Give me a legitimate experience. Help me to set up a tent, because I've never bought a tent, set one up, you know. Probably asking, what's a sleeping bag?
How old is this
but this is a contradiction.
Well, it's confidential, it's private, but the ad is up there and the agency is looking for someone. But there is a caveat. You have to be experienced in music festivals.
Yeah.
And you do have to be able to get me backstage.
Right.
So it's the true festival experience, right?
True festival experience, but with a few luxuries.
Yeah.
And you have to be my personal concierge.
Yeah.
So you probably have to stand in line to buy my lunch while I watch the show.
So that's not the true experience then?
No.
Well, it's...
You got to have a bit of DIY if you're going to have the true experience.
Like, you got to at least be able to roll your own joint.
Yeah. and figure out how to smuggle the booze in.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of booze, here's a scenario that I think is just taking the piss. There's dumb and then there's really dumb, and I think this is the latter. The Fine Art Bartending School in Vancouver in Canada was recently broken into, and some burglars stole a number of items, a computer, an iPad and some tools. And then they went on to steal some coloured water.
Coloured water.
Reason is because it's a bartending school, they have most of the spirits coloured with water, so it's not actually real alcohol on the shelf. And it actually has a significant sign above it saying, not alcohol. Yet the fools that broke in and decided to steal stuff took that on the assumption that there was alcohol.
Oh, goodness
my
me.
Goodness.
There you go.
Wow. Any more for any more? That's it. Actually, throw over to Brett too to speak to us about our mailbag, or sending us an email if you have any questions.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners that may have a question or maybe even a scenario that they would like to share with us. Please go to theinvestorexchange.com.au, and on the Ask tab on our website, you can either type us a message or you can even record it, and we'll have a listen and discuss it at our next episode.
Fantastic. We'll be back in the studio next week.
Thanks, Steph.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've been listening to this week's episode of The Investor Exchange. To access this episode's show notes, go to theinvestorexchange.com.au. and follow us on Facebook at The Investor Exchange for updates on our latest episodes. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Before making any investment decision, contact United Global Capital by emailing ugc.net.au for a personalised, no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Or alternatively, email us at info@ugc.net.au.